you've tuned to The Turley Frequency, starring your host, Kevin Turley, with guest stars Mike Romano and Reed Hodges, and special guest stars, the members of the FCC, whom we respect respectfully. Now, time to get tuned into The Frequency. Call the show at 888-928-0881. That's 888-928-0881. Or text us at 251-928-2111. And now we cross live to the Archangel Radio Studios in downtown Fairhope to at last feel the Turley Frequency.
Hello and welcome to another week here of the Turley Frequency, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Turley, and for the next 2 hours, we'll be illuminating, exciting, and educating, and every other E I can work into this in equal measure. Welcome on board. Today on the show, we meet the movie and the media behind the directors and the chaplain of Nefarious. Yes, the hit movie. We speak with Kerry, Chuck, and Father Darren in the next segment. I'm not sure there's any room for me. You're going to have to stick around to find out about that. When we finish talking about exorcisms and movies and all the rest, we are going to be praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet at 9 a.m. Central Time, and you're invited to join us. Feel free to text me your prayer request, Psalm 251-928-2111. In the final segment today, we get serious. We meet the author, Kerry Grass, to discuss her new book, The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us. Stick around to find out more. Okay, with all that good stuff, let's get this show on the road. You know, when I was introducing Kerry Grass there and said that her new book is Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us, I had to refrain from saying you'll have a smashing time if you stick around for that. Anyway, welcome on board another week here on the Turley Frequency. Let's find out, first of all, if we're ready to roll. Reed, is all our technical support ready for this onslaught on the radio airwaves?
Give me a go, no go for launch. Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go flying.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Surgeon.
Go flight.
Ecom.
We're go flight.
GNC.
We're go.
Telmu.
Go.
Control.
Go flight.
Procedures.
Go.
Inco.
Go.
FAO.
We are go.
Network.
Go.
Recovery.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go flight.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
Sounds like that's a maybe. I think we're ready. I think we're ready to roll for this this new week. Now, I'm going to play you a snatch of something and wonder, just wonder, would you like to be awakened to this? No, it's not the sound of silence. We're just lining up a short video clip for you, an audio clip, which we are about to play. So, again, I ask you, would you like to be awoken in the morning, bright and early, to the sound of this? And so on and so forth. You know this sort of music. I think it's called techno. Techno music. It's beyond me. Do you know what I mean? When I stopped listening to popular music, all these other music started appearing. There was house, techno, garage. I mean, it all sounded like somebody doing the electrics in your home. But anyway, it's very, very popular. But the music I've just played you comes from, no, not some wild rave at the weekend in downtown Mobile. not some shindig in Daphne or Fairhope or somewhere else. It comes from, believe it or not, World Youth Day. World Youth Day, I know. This was the music that a certain priest, Father Guilherme Piazzotto, I'm sure I'm butchering his name, he was delegated, the person, to wake everybody up, to get them going in the mornings at World Youth Day. And he would do so by playing techno music. He was labeled the priest DJ. Now, I don't know about you, but my toes began to curl a little bit when I saw this headline, because if you grew up in the 1970s and 80s, you will have met many a trendy priest with electric guitar who tried to be down with the kids, and all the kids, as I was a kid then, we would just laugh and smirk thinking, this is so old. Anyway, this priest is a 49-year-old Portuguese priest from the Archdiocese of Braga. And his whole interest in techno music is actually quite good. The reason is this: he's been 13 years a parish priest in a number of parishes in that diocese, as well as chaplain to the local Portuguese army. And what he did was, a number of years ago, he learned how to do this DJing to support himself and the parish financially, the parish of St. Michael. So one of our archangel supporters in heaven. So there's a nice way in which he's doing this. He said, and I'm going to quote you, he said, "We had a big debt, the end of the restoration of the parish residence. We didn't have classrooms for catechism and there were needs to be resolved, etc., etc. The usual stuff that you get at parish level." So he started doing these concerts to raise money. And so far, so good. I'm not sure it's the thing I would want to be woken up to first thing in the morning, though. But that said, I looked at the video earlier of him performing, if that's the right word, at World Youth Day. And I have to say, the young people there, the kids, young teenagers and all the rest of it, they were loving it. They were loving it. They were dancing around and getting into the groove, or whatever the term is these days. They were really, really into it. And they were also beginning to chant with it. There was no lyrics in it. They were beginning to chant. And I wondered if they were starting to chant nice things like, I don't know, Viva la Papa, or Hail Holy Queen, Salve Regina. Who knows? But it probably was something nice. They seemed to be full of joy anyway. So it was a kind of a nice story to start the week with. And it also dovetails with who our patron saint is today. Now, I know you know who the patron saint is today. I know you know who the... Anyway, okay. The patron saint today is, of course, St. Maximilian Kolbe. St. Maximilian Kolbe. For those of you who don't know who he was or what he did, and there must be very, very few of you left in the Catholic world anyway, I'm just going to play you a short clip, a short EWTN news item, which it's only a couple of minutes long, but it's a nice kind of summary of who he was and how he died, which is more important, because Father St. Maximilian Kolbe is, of course, a martyr. So take a little listen to this, which is a short potted history of who this man was and why he still matters.
"Work makes one free," says the inscription in German at the entrance of the Auschwitz concentration camp in Poland. Thousands of people entered this gate and never returned home. But on August the 14th, 1941, St. Maximilian Maria Kolbe went against the idea of violence by sacrificing his own life in exchange for another man's. Father Piotr Wisniewski, director of EWTN Poland, walks us through the camp and tells us that his own grandfather was imprisoned at the same block, number 11, where St. Maximilian Kolbe offered up his life. Father Piotr tells us St. Maximilian spent the last 2 weeks of his life with 10 other people in this cell. St. Maximilian led the prisoners in prayer, standing or kneeling in the middle of the cell. According to an eyewitness who worked as a janitor in the prison, one day the Nazis selected a fellow inmate, Franciszek Gajowniczek, and 9 other men to die. But after listening to Gajowniczek speak of his wife and 2 sons, St. Maximilian volunteered to die in his place. After 2 weeks, St. Maximilian was the only one who remained alive.
Święty Maksymilian Kolbe.
Father Piotr says the Nazis were running out of time, and so they decided to kill St. Maximilian by an injection of carbolic acid, phenol. He met his death by voluntarily holding his left palm open, demonstrating with this gesture his love and forgiveness to all those who sought justice through their closed fists and violence. St. Maximilian Kolbe was cremated on August the 15th, on the Feast of the Assumption of Mary. As the founder of the Knights of the Immaculate, he truly served Our Lady until his final breath.
So there you go. There's the final conclusion of the life of St. Maximilian Kolbe. Many of you will know that story. I have to say, I've been in that cell in Auschwitz, and 10 people in that cell is incredible. Okay, I think the time I went there, we were only allowed in one at a time into the cell. It's that small. Right. So 10 people in a cell that size for 2 weeks. And believe it or not, they weren't sort of, some of them were standing, but some of them were just sort of lying on top of each other. It was an absolute hellhole that he was put into. So we remember him today. Now, St. Maximilian Kolbe is known for his martyrdom, rightly, in 1941. He was 47 when he died, when he was murdered by the Nazis. But his 47 years up until then had been full of other wonderful, wonderful adventures. Far too much to go into in this segment. Maybe we'll return to it through the week. He was a great scholar, very, very educated, very learned man. But you probably know that he is the patron saint of two things very close to my heart. The first is journalists, because he started a newspaper. He started a newspaper when he was in Japan. And that newspaper, I believe, went all around the world and continues to this day. And the second thing that he's a patron saint of is amateur radio operators, what's known colloquially as ham radio operators, people who just do their own radio signals and send out. That's because St. Maximilian Kolbe realized the importance and the necessity of the church, the Catholic Church, being involved in mass media. And the best mass media of his day was obviously newspapers. That's why he was so involved in it. But he had an eye to the future. He understood what Archangel Radio and Relevant Radio and all these other wonderful stations would become today. He saw the power of radio, even in the early days of its creation. Remember that radio, commercial radio in the United States and here in Britain, didn't really start until the early 1920s. By the end of that decade, however, it was a phenomenon. And by the end of the 1930s, this saint had his own radio station, and he was broadcasting throughout Poland. And it was only the Nazis who were able to close that down and stop it, which is rather sad. There is a radio station which is named after St. Maximilian Kolbe. It's called Radio to the Max, and it's a Catholic radio station out in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And I was looking at its website today. It looks like a great station. And they have taken St. Maximilian to heart very, very much in their mission of radio broadcasting. Which leads me to a rather sad announcement I have to make, which is that the Turley Frequency has effectively been handed its eviction notice from this wonderful radio station. Unless we can come up with some serious rent money in the coming days, by the end of the month, then I'm afraid that the Turley Frequency will be switched off around these parts. That's what we're looking at. So, listen, we pray for miracles on this show, and we pray that maybe somehow we will be able to find the funds and the means to keep the show on the air. But we are probably in the last days of the Turley Frequency broadcasting to you each day. Now, I can assure you that no matter whether it's one show or 20 shows left, you will have exactly the same show that you have had every single day since we started broadcasting 10 months ago. I will ensure that we will try to entertain and excite you and also start your day with the right spirit of prayer and positivity about what is possible through God's grace each day. But I was told today it's probably best to give you the heads up on that, that we are cantering to the close of this frequency. And I have to say, it's been an absolute privilege to be with you every single day, and I will cherish the moments that I have got to know so many wonderful people from Alabama over these last months, if only via the airwaves. But in its current form, I'm afraid things will fall silent, as I say, at the end of the month, unless we have a miracle, and it will take a miracle. And you know what? I'm rather relieved about that. Let me tell you why. Because if it's a miracle that keeps this show on the air, then it's very much proof that this is a work which is smiled upon by the heavens. If, however, it doesn't come to pass and the show ends, well, it was meant to end. That is God's will as well. And the one thing that we pray for on this show is miracles, but we always say, we always have the caveat, which is, if it be according to God's will. There is no point in wanting things just because I want them or you want them. That's absolutely hopeless. What we want is God's will to be done in our lives at all times. And sometimes those are big decisions, such as whether this show continues, or whether it's smaller things that we commit to God each day, each moment of each day, and say, Lord, let your will be done in this situation. For example, I was going out to Mass this morning. It was pouring with rain. The skies were opened. We're not having a summer. We're having a sort of a rainy season over here in London. Anyway, the skies were opening. It was pouring. And I said, Lord, if it be possible. And I looked to St. Joseph, who, as you know, is a wonderful weatherman. And I am not kidding you. By the time I had my shoes on, the rain had stopped. Now, that, thanks be to God. That was a little answer to a prayer. But if God had wanted me to get soaked through to the skin on my way to Mass, well, so be it. Let your will be done, Lord. So that is the situation that we find ourselves in at this moment. Now, as you know, today is the feast of St. Maximilian Kolbe, and we have a great devotion to him because of his interest in journalism and radio. So we commit this show and everybody on it to his care and attention. But at the moment, I always feel a little bit sorry for St. Maximilian Kolbe, especially for people doing novenas to him, because he is in the shadow of one of the biggest feast days of the year, which is tomorrow, which is the Feast of the Assumption of Our Lady. And I'm sure St. Maximilian Kolbe would not have minded in the slightest, because he is a man who had a great devotion to Our Lady. In fact, one of his great promotions was that of consecration to the Immaculate Heart, to the Sacred Heart of Jesus through the Immaculate Heart of Mary, something which we were hoping to do live on air on this show. But before we finish, probably we'll be able to get at least another novena in. But at the moment, we are in the process of praying a novena to Our Lady for the Feast of the Assumption. And remember, just like all the prayers on this show, we're praying it live on air, but if you're listening to it, you are part of that novena. So listen, this is the last day, effectively, of the novena. So all you have to do now, if you're not driving, is close your eyes and ask for something. That's right. Give Our Lady something that you would like to have happen, okay? Because, as I've said before, Mother Angelica hit the nail on the head, though other very holy people in the past have said the same thing. When it comes to prayers of intercession, you must, repeat, must, be specific. There's no point in praying to the Lord, make me a better person. No, Lord, help me with that anger. Lord, help me with... join the dots. Everybody's different, right? But you know what it is. Some little presenting problem. Well, in the same way, in this petition, this novena, in the run-up to the Feast of the Assumption, it's good to ask for something. So in a moment, I'm going to ask Reed to read out the prayer we've been using, which is a very ancient prayer from the 3rd century, one of the oldest prayers to Our Lady. And just as he's doing that, do ask Our Lady for something. So, Reed, for the last time, take it away.
We fly to thy protection, O Holy Mother of God. Do not despise our petitions in our necessities, but deliver us always from all dangers, O glorious and blessed Virgin.
Amen.
Amen. Thank you.
Welcome back to Eternal Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. It's great to have your company on this Monday morning. I hope you're well wherever you are, whatever you're doing, whether you're out walking the dog or driving the car, walking down the street, sitting at home enjoying a cup of coffee, whether you're sitting in a bar having another cup of coffee, or whether you're behind bars serving time. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, very happy to have you on board, especially if you are ill in any way. We're here to cheer you up. Now, talking of cheering up, when I heard that my next guests were coming on, I had a broad smile on my face. They've all been on the show before, and they are, how can I put it? We would say over this side of the Atlantic, they are good fun. And that's an understatement. I'm talking about Chuck Kunzelman, Carrie Solomon, the directors of Nefarious and many other movies as well, such as Unplanned, Do You Believe, etc., etc. And also Father Darren Merlino. Do you remember Father Darren, who's been on the show a couple of times, who's a Catholic media missionary out in that mission field, which is Los Angeles, California. And he has also been chaplain to this film, Nefarious, and has a little vignette in it, a little small bit part, which I now remember. I've seen a photograph of him in his role. So all these men are linked nefariously, but they're all round good guys taking the fight to the Hollywood elites where it hurts, at the box office. Chuck, Carrie, and Father Darren, come in. Is there anybody out there?
I'm here.
That's Father Darren, is it?
Yes, Father Darren here. Sorry.
Father Darren, I think we're just lining up with Chuck and Kerry. They're probably just signing some multi-million dollar deal with a producer. You know what it's like with those two.
Yes, it is. That's what we call breakfast. Yes.
They're the sort of breakfast you have in Hollywood, right? It's all when the deals are made. The movers and the shakers, breakfast. I think they're called.
Yeah, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That's where all the deals are made, that's for sure.
Yes, but I presume, Father, you know that some of those deals are with, shall we say, deals with the devil?
Yes, that would be what we call in my country an understatement, yes.
Absolutely. Now, I was so glad whenever Michelle, our wonderful executive producer, told me that you were coming on again with Kerry and Chuck, but I did say to Michelle, I said, there'll be no room for me. Are you kidding me? Father Darren,
yes.
Kerry, and Chuck, all in the same bill?
Yeah, Carrie and Chuck and myself, it was a lot of fun when we got together during COVID. We would probably start around 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening and end around midnight finishing talking, because we would just talk about so many different things. In fact, Nefarious was one of the things that we were talking about during COVID when they were writing it and getting it ready for screen. Yes. Yeah, we had a lot of conversations.
Were Kerry and Chuck those archetypal creatives that you start with one half of a sentence and end up 20 sentences later still debating it or talking about it?
Yeah, like when you and I were talking about creativity, that's probably non sequiturs and all over the place is the norm when we get together. That's for sure.
That's just like an average radio show in the Turley frequency, that is. I mean.
Yeah, exactly. It's like your first hour, I guess. Yeah.
It's like the monologue every day. It just sort of flows around the place. That's part of the fun of it. So, Father Darren, while we're waiting for Chuck and Kerry to get lined up here, I mean, I must ask you about the fact that the director of The Exorcist, the original film that kicked off this whole craze, he just died recently. Did you hear?
Yes, I did hear that. I was kind of disappointed, not more besides his death, but I had heard that he became Catholic before he passed, and I wanted to interview him for my TV series, and I was unable to do so, because I know Blatty, I think it was Paul Blatty, had a lot of influence on him becoming Catholic. I did only see him once in L.A. They were showing The Exorcist and The Sorcerer film at this the Arrow Theater in Santa Monica, and at that time, I don't know if he was Catholic at the time, but he had some interesting advice for, because obviously there were a lot of film school students in there watching the films and the.
Wow, well there you go, We've lost Father Darren, and we can't connect with Chuck or Kerry. So isn't this good? This is what always happens when we touch this subject.
He's calling us right back, Kevin. Let me go ahead and get him back.
That, That's okay. Whenever we talk about exorcisms and such like, the lines go down, isn't it? You know, I mean, we have audio proof now of this phenomena on this show many, many times. Nothing new about this. These sorts of things happen all the time. So we're discussing the death recently of the director of The Exorcist, the 1973 film, which there's been a lot of films about exorcism since, but that was the first film that really took center stage. And it was very much a mainstream film. It was a film where it managed to jump out of the horror genre and became a very mainstream hit. A very, very successful film in its day, so much so that
all right, Kevin.
The director. Thank you, Reed.
We have Father Merlino back.
That's great. So I'm just saying, Father Darren, that The Exorcist, unlike many, many inferior films since, in its day, really was a mainstream Hollywood movie. You know, William Friedkin, the director, was nominated for an Oscar that year as Best Director. It was a film which was preeminently successful at the box office. And looking back now, do you not think it's even stranger to think how that film came about and at the time that it came?
Well, you know, it's interesting that they were able to take a real case and change the story. The guy Robbie, that's his quote unquote name in real life, and they made it to a female instead of a male. A lot of the things that happened in The Exorcist happened in the real case of Robbie, who I think lives in St. Louis. He's probably in his 80s or 90s if he's still alive. I know that some people know his true identity. I do not. I have no idea. But yes, it's there's obviously some Hollywood into it. Obviously, the head spinning is very Hollywood, because every exorcist I've ever talked to says that's never happened. So, but the hatred of the devil towards God is beyond real. The hatred towards us is beyond real. People don't really completely understand how that is, how the evil ones do not, under any circumstance, have any love, no mercy. When you have pure hate, pure unadulterated lying and deception and, evil, we're not used to that as human beings. When we hear it, it's hard for us to grasp how evil is. And so, from abortion to human trafficking to sex slaves, all this beyond horror is, for them, it's normal. For us, it's abnormal as Christians and as Catholics. We have to I don't know how to say this. We have to be aware that that's how evil they are. And they're like that on purpose by nature. But we as Christians have to be the opposite by nature and on purpose.
Amen to that. Father Darren, I think we've been joined by our directors, Carrie and Chuck. Carrie and Chuck, are you there?
We are. We are.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for getting up so early. I know working in the film industry, you're not normally up until midday, so I'm really, really grateful for you getting up and making time for us this morning.
Yeah, you're spot on. Oh, yes.
That is an inside joke. I know that most people who work in the film industry are at the crack of dawn, especially when they're filming. So that was a joke. Listen, Kerry and Chuck, it's great to have you back on. I said to Father Darren when we were waiting on you that when Michelle told me all three of you were coming on the show this morning, I said, well, what am I going to do? Because these three, I mean, once they get going, it's good night for me. But we're just discussing, we've just been talking about The Exorcist, the 1973 movie, and the recent death of its director, William Friedkin. And Father Darren was telling me something which I hadn't heard, which is that at the end, Mr. Friedkin converted to the Catholic faith. Have you heard this as well?
No, but I'm delighted.
Yeah, that would be good news, because I was contemplating his death the other day. And when you were talking earlier, I mean, I said to myself, I hope he was prepared. I hope he found the Lord, because
he was Hollywood royalty. I mean, his wife ran Paramount for a number of years. So, wow, that's great.
That's great news. Praise be to God.
Yes.
God, I hope it's true.
Yeah, Father Darren, I mean, do you have any, I mean, have you seen evidence for this, or is this just at the moment?
You know what, I remember hearing it somewhere, and I don't remember where I read it or heard it, and I'm going to have to go, now I'm going to have to look for it now that we've talked about it.
While we were waiting, I did a quick check on Wikipedia, which of course is de fede and all such issues, and I came across this at the very end. It says that although he was raised Jewish and agnostic for most of his life, he said at the end that he strongly believed in the teachings of Jesus Christ. Now, strongly believed. Let's wait and see. Who knows? I mean, let's hope and pray. I mean, I love a happy ending, and a deathbed conversion for me is one of the happiest endings of all. What is not to like? So we're in the discussion, Chuck and Kerry, and feel free to just jump in about why the Exorcist movie of 1973. First of all, why it was such a roaring success at the box office, but where did it come from? Do you know what I mean? There was no real history, not just of exorcism movies, but of horror movies being so mainstream. And suddenly in 1973, at the height of the new Hollywood, when all films were so realistic, we have The Exorcist taking movie theaters by storm. Any ideas as to where it came from?
Well, I think what happened was, I think part of the appeal was, no one had ever seen anything like this world before. You know, compare it to The Godfather. The Godfather wasn't just a great movie. You know, it came off a super successful book, but it was the first time anyone had ever gotten a look in the mainstream audience into the way the mafia worked. And it was a complete mystery to the average American. Well, Exorcism was a complete mystery to the average audience member as well. And so there was the allure of that. And just, I mean, I'm old enough to remember the sensationalism that accompanied it. And it was one of these things that for adults was, you know, have you seen it or haven't you seen it? And it was just the raging question of that day.
You also have to remember, you know, if you compare Nefarious, what happened in Nefarious? He wanted him to write a book. William Peter Blatty wrote the book, right? So we see the consistency of the devil and the way he filtered.
Is there anybody left?
We still have Father Darren, but all it took was one mention of the devil, and down they went.
Yeah.
But Father Darren, we lost you once already on this show you mentioned
really quick,
the evil one, and bang, off it goes again. I mean, this is getting beyond a joke. I mean, I did say that whenever we talk about this subject, we always have technical difficulties. But, I mean, this is now getting to the point where anytime we mention him, bang, off it goes. So, listen, I'll tell you what we're going to do, Father Darren, if it's okay. We're going to take a very quick break now and try to get everybody lined up again. And we'll be back with Father Darren, with Kerry and Chuck. And but we're not going to be talking anything nefarious, because the minute we do, bang, off it all goes. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency here, live and exclusive, just about, on the Archangel Radio Network. Welcome back to the Turley Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Turley, and I'm in conversation with Kerry Solomon, Chuck Kunzelman, and Father Darren Marlino, all of whom have been involved recently in the hit movie Nefarious. How I love saying that. And the movie, I believe, is being released on DVD tomorrow. Is that right, gentlemen?
Yes, it is.
Now, that's very 1990s of you. Why did you decide to release it on a DVD?
You know, our the Christian market especially still likes DVDs, and Father Darren ordered that we do it, so that was it.
And we all know that when your confessor orders something, well, that's
there you go.
Yep.
Well, Father Darren, would you like to respond to that accusation live on air?
Yes, I take full responsibility of their idea.
Absolutely. Well, it's a great idea. I love it too. I mean, I don't know. I think people like to hold something. Do you know, they like to, and they also like to give something. Now, I don't know about you, but recently I wrote an article about Nefarious for the National Catholic Register, and I was amazed at the reaction to it. You know, the number of people that were commenting on it. And I was looking the other day at something else on Facebook from the National Catholic Register, and they had republished it. And there were nearly 500, this is like weeks after it's been published, and 500 comments on Facebook about the article and about Nefarious, effectively. And they were all saying the same thing. They were all saying how much they loved the movie, how they wanted to watch it again, how they took their friends to it. It was just this avalanche of praise for the movie. Chuck and Kerry, Father Darren, I mean, are you guys familiar with how many people are so grateful to you for making this movie in the first place, but also the kind of real warmth that this movie has engendered amongst your natural constituency of moviegoers?
You know, we're humbled, and it is crazy amazing because we're finding that people are watching the movie 3, 4, 5, 6 times. Some people have called me 13 times they've watched the movie. I mean, Jim Caviezel, the actor, loved the movie so much. And, you know, he's the guy, the actor who played Jesus. So in irony, he said he loved it. We went to his house and we spoke about it all day. And he saw it 3 times in 5 days. So you're talking about there is a phenomenon going on and the movie is not dying. It's still, you know, people are still coming to it and watching it. I think it may actually grow into a sleeper where it just doesn't die. It keeps going and going and going because we've barely gotten anyone to see it.
Yeah, and thank you for that article, by the way, because ironically, there had been, by the film reviewer in the National Catholic Review, there had been really a pretty negative review of the film. And that matched critics overall. But we have the widest spread between critical reaction and audience reaction of any film I've ever seen. The critics are down. It was about, you know, 15 or 20%. I think we're actually up to, we somehow managed to impress about 30% of them, which is pretty awful. But as far as the audience hovers about 96, 97% approval.
It's crazy.
Which is absolutely phenomenal. So it's almost inexplicable.
I think, you know, I know we've talked before, guys, and I know all of you probably a little squeamish about describing it as a horror movie, but nevertheless, it will fall into that genre. There's other genres, there's crossover and all the rest, but it is in that genre. And to my eyes and ears, this appears to be the classic cult movie horror experience, right? Think of films like, for example, The Wicker Man, or I'm not thinking of the big budget Exorcist and that, but I'm thinking of films which came out of nowhere and are still being played many, many years later and have a cult following. Is that your take on it, any of you? You know, that this film will become a kind of cult movie in a sense in years to come?
I think it will. For a certain segment of the audience, this is one of their favorite films that just came out of nowhere, completely unexpected, no advertising, you know, and they just fell in love with it. And ironically, a lot of that audience is composed of priests.
I would also say, by the way, that I really think it stands alone. It's kind of, you've never seen anything like it before. So what I'm, you know, it's just sitting in its own space. And I think, like, when people bring it up, if they've seen it, they talk about it in a different way than, you know, Top Gun or, you know, whatever is out there at that time. There's something, and I think it's the spirit. I also think it's the truth. You know, we knew when we were on set, when Father was on set and we were doing the blessing, there was something crazy different about it. And we had done Unplanned right before that. But it was different than anything else.
We went through 5 pounds of exercised salt just in the arena where our hero set was.
Yeah, it still didn't work.
Father Darren, as to anybody listening, Father Darren was one of the chaplains, if not the chaplain, on set, which sounds as if it needed a chaplain. It needed a whole college of chaplains at one point.
Yeah.
But answer me this, Father Darren. I mean, you just heard, I think it was either Chuck or Kerry, I can't remember which, they were just saying how popular it was amongst priests. Is that something you're picking up? I mean, amongst your brother priests, are you beginning to find that there's a real kind of interest in this movie, or is it resonating?
Yes, I'm so shocked. In fact, I'm actually going to go out on a limb here that there's few new movies as Catholics and Christians that need to watch in their lifetime, and this is one of them because of the theological accuracy of how the devil works. I mean, it's really, it's like we always say, it's like Screwtapes meets Hannibal Lecter from Silence of the Lambs. There's a reason for, I've met so many priests that I've talked to who've seen it 3 to 5 times, and I'm going, this hasn't happened since The Passion of the Christ with Mel Gibson's movie, because it's one of those films that you really need as laity and people who aren't trained in this stuff to understand at least a flavor of how the devil thinks of you and how he works. And so to find priests are the hardest nuts to crack in the Catholic Church. Bishops are even harder. Forget cardinals and popes. But when you come to priests, they're so hard to impress. They're like doctors and lawyers. They're just really difficult to change their minds. And for me to hear so many of my priest friends like watch it 3 to 5 times, even exorcist friends of mine who go, my gosh, you guys got it right. And I go, well, wow. Chuck and Carrie do a phenomenal job of researching, and they're excellent writers, and they know what they're doing. And when you put that together, from when they did God's Not Dead and their arguments in that film to the first film and this one, they show a skill set that very few writers in the faith-based world have. And with priests who watch this film, now they can, some priests, as Carrie would probably tell you, some of his friends, some priests are watching the film as penance for some people. I don't know what that person did, but it's not a bad penance, but it's an easy one. But it's also it's a very educational piece. And I'm actually to the point now where I think that, well, we would have to come up with some type of a guideline to watch certain things in some parts of theology, so you can have a discussion at a parish or at a pastorship or some Protestant or Catholic church, and give them the opportunity to discuss this film.
Absolutely fascinating. Listen, if anybody's out there and wants to speak to the directors of Nefarious, Kerry or Chuck, or to its chaplain, Father Darren, then you can do so on 888-928-0881, or text me and I'll ask you questions on 251-928-2111. I have a question. I'll just throw it out there, whoever wants to pick it up. Somebody's saying that they talk to a lot of people who are too afraid to watch Nefarious. And what would the directors say to that? How scary is it?
You know, we made a mistake. We had the poster put people off, especially believers. And what our intention was, our heart was in the right place, but our head wasn't. It was what we wanted to do is we wanted to bring in 15 to 29-year-olds who were involved in witchcraft. All these kids are obsessed with these demonic movies nowadays. Like the question you asked before, you know, how did this come out of nowhere? Well, this demonic, I believe it was intentional from the book to the movie to now, because we're, these kids are just obsessed, and they're getting possessed, they're getting infested, they're getting terrible things to happen. So we figured that if we could get them, because they're so drawn to horror movies, people are so drawn to them, almost like an obsession. If we could bring them in, sit them down, it would almost it has served as a wake-up call. But the problem was, it scared off your traditional movie-going audience as well, and also the same thing with the trailer. When you look at the trailer, really, I mean, that's a scary trailer, but when you're in the movie, it's two guys talking in a room. And there's no demonics, there's no satanics, there's no sex, there's no F-bombs, there's no bad language. It's a conversation between the devil and a psychiatrist, which is fascinating in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that. I mean, it's the problem is the obsession with sort of labeling something as a horror movie or a thriller or whatever. But there's something very, I don't know, Chuck, what do you think of this? I think there's something kind of old-fashioned, and I mean that in the best sense, classic Hollywood about Nefarious, which is, you know, it's that kind of, it reminds me, do you remember that moment at the end of Angels with Dirty Faces when James Cagney's talking to the priest about should he go to his death and all of that? And there's a kind of intensity which is raw about it. It's that kind of thing that you get in Nefarious. It's not really a scary movie. It's an intense movie.
Yeah, what happens is that the audience is by design the third participant in this conversation, and we pull them, it's shot in such a way that it pulls them to the table, and so they're eavesdropping on this. They're not just witnessing this conversation, they're right there at the table between these two entities, between the demon-possessed killer and the psychiatrist. And so the audience winds up on the edge of their seat because this discussion does not go where they expect it to. And it keeps twisting and turning, and the devil keeps turning the tables on his would-be interviewer. And so that's what happens in the film. That's where the intensity of the film is. It's not that, it's not about cheap scares. It's about watching that onion get peeled layer by layer and seeing how the demonic agenda works and what their operating system looks like.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm intrigued by this notion that people are giving it out as penance, Father Darren. I mean, it wouldn't be a penance for me if you made me watch Sound of Music again. That would be a penance. But is this something which priests can do? I mean, can you literally say go and watch this film as a penance? Is that allowed?
Yeah. Yes, you can. Yeah, everything's allowed as long as it's moral. As long as it's not a sin, yeah, you never know. Sometimes you're inspired by the Holy Spirit to listen to what the person needs. Who knows what the guy was involved with? Maybe he was involved in a cult. I had no idea why the priest would do that. Maybe the priest just wanted people to see the film and he was trying to promote the film. I have no idea why he did that. I haven't done it yet because it really hasn't. For most of the sins that I'm dealing with in the confessional, it hasn't come up for that. But I would, if I, now that I know that they can watch it on streaming and they can rent it and all that kind of stuff, I probably would if I knew the situation was warranted.
Absolutely. Listen, we're running out of time very quickly. I've got another question here, and I'm just going to throw it at you all. Are these gentlemen being affected by the Hollywood strike? Only the sound of champagne corks that are popping off the ceiling, I think. But anybody want to reply to that?
Not for me.
Well, as a member emeritus of the Writers Guild, I at a certain level, I hope they stay out forever. Matter of fact, I will confess this. I've already mentioned this outside the confessional to my confessor. I said, we're in town in L.A. temporarily, and we drove past the Warner's lot the other day, and I was shocked because the Writers Guild protesters were out there, and they looked so angry. And I would have expected that on day two or day three of the strike, and it was like day 102. And I had this tremendous urge, but I knew the Lord would not be pleased. I wanted to scream out, never surrender, don't ever give up.
But listen, you must have heard the news that Disney, who is now saying it's the most woke cinema company, blah, 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 they, during the middle of this strike, they're advertising for AI, people to come and operate their AI. Not so much solidarity with the workers from the House of Mouse, is there?
No, but I think that's a ploy overall, because Paramount also came out and said they're not going to continue to make content any longer. They're just going to use what they've got. But, I think this is a good thing, because I think it's the destruction of Hollywood. This strike is unlike any other strike. I think it's going to go a long time, and I think the Lord is letting Hollywood destroy itself. It's wreathed in sin, and it's consuming itself. And I tell you what, we're ecstatic. We have two feelings on it, joy and ecstasy. I mean, it's just, we couldn't be happier, because the bottom line is they're the enemy. They're doing the will of the devil. And so therefore, they must be destroyed.
Listen, it's so good hearing you guys again. I'm afraid we're out of time almost, but in the next segment, we're going to be praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet. We pray for all our guests, so we'll be praying for your intentions. But is there anything or anyone in particular that each of you would like us to pray for during that time? Let's start with you, Father Darren. Anybody you'd like us to pray for in the next 30 minutes?
Yes, some friends of mine, parents have passed away. This is their anniversary this week, so for the repose of their souls.
Okay, we'll do that. Carrie.
General Heine, kid, people in Maui.
Yes,
sorry, what was that?
My wife, Irene De Lacerda, who is, she's having heart problems and is probably close to death, and my sister who suffered her whole life. I think she's a victim soul. Okay. Mandy Solomon.
We'll pray for Mandy and Irene. And Chuck?
I'm going to be the selfish one and ask that prayers for us for our continued protection and discernment as we go forward.
You got that. Listen, Father Darren, Carrie and Chuck, thank you so much for coming on the show. If this show was continuing, this would have been a regular slot, and I had a name for it. It was going to be called Exorcisms or Us. But for now, Chuck, Carrie, and Father Darren, good night and God bless.
God bless you guys.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, Father.
Bye-bye, guys.
Back after these words with the Divine Mercy Chaplain.